It's the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Famous Monsters of Filmland Magazine.
Welcome to a special edition of the Famous Monsters Podcast, the official podcast of Forrest J. Ackerman's Classic Magazine. It started it all back in 1958. Often imitated, never duplicated, we are more than just monsters. We cover sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and all kinds of genre pop culture, living up to Forrest's classic roots while staying current and ahead of the curve. I'm David Weiner, editor of Famous Monsters, and today we've got a special podcast in that it's a shorter version than some of the epic things that we like to put out, even though we have a small output at this point. We're going to be talking with Tova Feldsha, the Walking Dead matriarch, who may or may not have met an untimely end at the mid-season finale that we all saw and cringed and watched and had head-scratching moments with. It was pretty intense, and I had a wonderful opportunity to talk with Tova about working on The Walking Dead, about those end moments, and if they truly are the end moments, or if we might even see her again. And now, please enjoy our conversation.
I have to tell you, I'm very happy to be speaking to you in person and not to a corpse.
Thank you. Well, don't forget, just like in the great Greek plays, you don't see me die yet. So you may not be done with me, but we don't know.
That's very, 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 very true, and especially in the world of Walking Dead. So I don't want to, I definitely don't want to leap to conclusions, but we have to admit it did look grim at the very end when you came out fighting at the very end.
Looked very, very grim, but you never know. In my blood, they're very strong people, the Monroes. Maybe I'm the one person who's got the resistance strain, just like those people that couldn't get AIDS. Remember that? How peculiar that was? How wonderful.
Yeah.
Was that we're certain we had a very close ally that died of AIDS when the disease was being very covered up, and the wife never got it. And they
really,
you know,
that's interesting.
It was wild. She was spared somehow. Anyway, back to The Walking Dead.
Please continue your train of thought.
Not at all. It's the best job I've ever had in television. It's a brilliant job, and I would love to live forever. But as you know, everybody comes on The Walking Dead to at one point die. And death seems to play no favorites on The Walking Dead. Of course, except for Daryl.
Daryl, there would be a major uprising if he even broke his leg, I think.
That's right. That Daryl is preserve and protect.
Well, I have to say, you carried your character with such courage and dignity throughout your tenure with The Walking Dead. But when Alexandria was devastated by the wolves, I kind of had a feeling that was going to be the end for you. And so I was very, very pleased to see that you made it through unscathed. But obviously things changed dramatically towards the end. For an actor like you who has been through a variety of genres and stage and television and screen, what was The Walking Dead experience like for you? And what was your character like in terms of your connection to it?
Well, first of all, I, like many of the people employed on The Walking Dead, I got the job no question after meeting on it, but when you meet for The Walking Dead, you're never given the script. You're given a completely different project, and truly a project removed. When I go back to look at it, I think I played the head of intelligence or something like that in the audition. It was a very dangerous scene, and it was a scene where I said to my opponents, I think I was shackled, I know when you're going to die and how you're going to die, so I suggest you uncuff me now, one of those kind of authoritarian things. So just getting the role and not knowing what you're getting into because you haven't seen the script because it's so highly secretive that until you accept the job, they're not going to share even the script with you. So it's very interesting. So Scott Gimple, who's just, we worship, you know, calls you and he describes the character in depth. and the one politician I had met and incidentally liked very much was Hillary Clinton when she was first lady, and then again when she was a senator for my state. She did very well by us, and she also met my children, and she was incredibly brilliant. So I based some of my experience with her on the experience I wanted people to feel about Tiana Monroe, that she was a worthy leader. You know, this is notwithstanding all the tremendous gossip and attacks that all of our politicians are faced with now. You know, there's literally no sacred territory left. The most important psychological aspect about working on the Walking Dead is the loving atmosphere of the set. I don't think I've ever been in an artistic community that was less appropriately judgmental, and more loving, just more open-armed. If you're with us, we love you. I don't think I've ever been on a set that was quite as extraordinary in that one way in my entire artistic life. That's saying a lot. So I've headed companies, and I've learned from my employment in The Walking Dead over 1 year, I was there for a good 12 months, I think if I have the privilege of heading other companies again, let us say on Broadway or wherever, I will be that much better a leader myself. It was outstanding. We had a lead player who would get to the set early so he could hug everybody. He would come to the set, see my work. He came one day, he wasn't working. I said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "I wanted to see you work. I wanted to witness your work. I wanted to." And the day that I was killed off, or not killed off, the day that I had to meet what looks like my demise, I was not killed, actually, everybody came to the set. Everybody.
Oh, really?
You know, all the whether they worked or not, all the principals showed up to wish me well, to be next to the monitors. It was amazing. The whole bunch.
I get the feeling that that set, I've only heard wonderful stories just like this one from that set, but I also get the impression that everyone almost lives their life and their weeks like it may be their last. So the mood is very jovial and upbeat because enjoy it and live in the present. Am I correct?
You are correct. It is jovial, but it does not make fun of the work. It's jovial, ha-ha, but it does not do it at the expense of the work. That's a very important distinction. I was on The Talking Dead, and one of my dear colleagues, a brilliant actor in his own right and a wonderful man and a very smart man, made a crack about my last scream, and he belittled it. And I was extremely annoyed because we never did that on the set, never. I do that silent scream. Actually, it was not a silence. It was a blood-curdling ad-lib. It wasn't in the script, of course. And I just let it rip, and the whole set went froze. And then they kept it. But when I look at it, I think of the samurai movies. I think of Kurosawa. I think of the great Asian movies and the great warriors. Or in Rotorua in New Zealand, the Maori, how they scared the enemy by opening their mouths, sticking out their tongues. You know, the very famous Maori warriors. So that's where my head goes. So it was very interesting. The set was light and bright in terms of its cordiality, in terms of the desire to laugh, but not at the expense of making fun of the work, which is very important.
Does that camaraderie lend itself off the set as well, or is it everyone clocks out after a wonderful day and then they go to their own space? Or is there a social element that you enjoyed?
There's a social element, but people are pretty spent. I mean, I saw Andy came to visit me in London in the hiatus, but he's exhausted after his work. It's not like he's running to one party after another. It doesn't happen that way. So there isn't, and it could be the fact that Deanna was a wonderful new temporary character, let's say a supporting character, and I know people loved me and wanted to see me in any party I was invited to, I went to, but both myself and Scott Wilson and a few of the other, you know, Denise Huth, even Norman, Andy, we do not live in apartment complexes in Atlanta with the younger actors, you know, and they're they're with a bunch of people, so it's very different. They can go out to for pizza, whatever they want, because they're in an apartment complex all together. I wanted the tranquility of a hotel, so I stayed in Peachtree City, and what I really wanted was to be near my work. And also, I live in Central Park West. We're doing renovations on a new home in the Hamptons, a new vacation home. All I want is a good housekeeper and room service. Thank you very much, and a 50-foot pool. So I really enjoyed my stay in Peachtree City. I loved it. It was quiet, tranquil. I would ride my bike and swim a half mile a day before my work, and I had a wonderful assistant that would come up from Atlanta and help me run my homes in New York while I was doing the series. But the whole thing was a total joy. You know, again, I'm born on 90th and Lexington, so just to be in rural Georgia, just to be part of that very, very different culture was a pleasure for me, and meeting all these different people with a different mentality. I mean, a New York minute and a Georgia minute are two very different things.
Yeah.
And I've learned to enjoy them. I've learned to enjoy them both. You know, why not?
It must have been very, very difficult and conflicting, if not obviously eventually expected, perhaps, when Scott delivered his news to you. How did you take
it? It was heartbreaking as he breaks the heart of every player that he says, "We love you. You're wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much." I couldn't fully take it in because naturally, I thought it was too soon, but every actor thinks it's too soon if they're on a job they love. It's like closing a show that you love that you think, and also I was part of this major, major hit, this industry. This weekend I go to the Walker Stalker Convention. I've been to others. I've been invited even for next year. So the shelf life of your participation far extends beyond whether you're breathing or not breathing on The Walking Dead.
Oh,
and it's a phenomenon I've never had. I mean, I was on Law and Order for 13 years every year. I did the Holocaust, the miniseries. That's the only thing I could compare it to. We did the second miniseries in the history of television. We filmed it in 1977, and it was released in 78. And, yes, I would go to Spain to promote it, and people went out of their minds. They went crazy. But we didn't have we didn't have Holocaust conventions, God forbid. You know, it was international recognition like this. When I'm in the gelato store in Milan, and don't forget, I'm not Rick Grimes. I'm not Norman. I'm not the core of the core, which would say Lauren Cohen, Andy Lincoln, Norman Reedus, Michael Cutlets to a certain degree, Stephen Ewan, Melissa McBride. And they've embraced Lenny James, but he's still coming in, too. So those original six, I'm not they. They've been on day in, day out for six seasons. So I've enjoyed this. At my age, I enjoy people acknowledging and seeing the work and saying thank you for the work. It's lovely.
Yeah, the fan collective is a very different breed, extremely passionate, extremely caring, and I would like to think extremely respectful as well. Go ahead.
Yeah,
please.
I agree. Seems to be. And, you know, that's a completely new fan base for me. I just did aging is optional because, God, I hope it is. I just wrote a new act in Quebec, and we sold out in New York. But I have a whole new fan base with tattoos and nose rings, so it's pretty crazy.
that's wonderful. Well, going back really quick to when Scott had told you this news, did you accept it and want to move on with dignity in your personal life, or did you stand in that room and fight for the role when you heard about it?
No. I'm a mother. I've played prime ministers. I've played communists. I've played capitalists. Oh, no. You do what's good for the team. End of discussion. You do what's right for the team. And, you know, it's those four principles. Always try your best. Keep your word impeccably. Assume or presume nothing. And here's the killer. Nothing is personal. So, in other words, I just had the honor and the pleasure of playing the mother of the title role of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the big episode on television with Rachel Bloom on Monday. I was killed, not killed. I was challenged. I was bitten. There we go. I was bitten Sunday night on The Walking Dead and was fighting for my physical and emotional life. And above all, what is Deanna, what's the last thing we see Deanna do? She chooses not to use the bullet for herself. She'd rather be, the word isn't devoured, she would rather face a much more ignominious death as long as she could kill some of the enemies of her community. So she does what's better for the greater good. Likewise, when I was told this news, and I was told very respectfully, and I had plenty of notice, they were very careful with me. They actually, not only are you sworn to secrecy about these things, because every actor knows before it happens, but they usually know a certain amount of time before they happen. They bent over backwards and told me much more than that amount of time, and I had to keep it under my belt from everybody for quite some time. And I was saddened. I was saddened emotionally, not like some, you know, I hope, not like some selfish narcissist who's a young, you know, a person that, well, why me and all this stuff and what am I going to do? None of that stuff. I was just sad to leave the feeling. Oh, that feeling of going to the set and the love that emanates from that set. Oh, my God. It's just beautiful.
Did you feel a certain simpatico with Steven, given the fact that he had to keep an equally horrifying secret?
Yeah, but he only had to keep it for 2 weeks, you know.
Okay, so. Was it short-lived for him?
Actually, that's not true. In Steven's defense and support, for much more, because we had to film it, and then it had to be aired. In other words, I knew I was going to face this episode long before November 29th, long before. Because that's the way film was made, you know. So there you go.
Well, you brought up Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and I have to say, after being killed or not killed, you truly killed it in at least the clip that I saw, where you really have to go to the bathroom badly. And I'm still laughing after watching that. What give me a taste of that experience, please?
It was fun. It was one of those things where you said, "My God, what did I do right in my life to deserve this opportunity?" I had been told that the bell was tolling for me on The Walking Dead, and like any normal person, I was hardly doing an Irish jig. And then I got this flat-out offer to come play her mother in a 3-episode arc. Then I had to go to The Walking Dead and ask permission. And the executive producers and I knew that they should let me do it, and they did let me do it, but the truth is, legally, you know, AMC has me for some months to come still. My full contract doesn't expire, whether they can option my services till sometime in 2016. So, of course, they let me do it, but I did have to ask permission, and they were happy to grant it. And I flew to Hollywood, or I was flown to Hollywood, and got these 3 episodes done on and off between filming things and doing things for The Walking Dead that had to do with the reshoots and ADR, and you never know. You may not be done with me next season. You don't know.
Well, it was very, very, very entertaining. And after seeing you in the context of Deanna, it was extremely rewarding and entertaining, because I know that everyone does have such a wonderful sense of humor on that set, and it's such a serious show when I'm talking about Walking Dead. It's always really welcome a moment when anyone breaks out song or humor or anything like that.
I couldn't agree with you more. And also, the difference in the set with Rachel Bloom was insane. It was insane. They're very relaxed at my Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and the demands of my Crazy Ex-Girlfriend are crazy. I was given a 5-page solo with barely any rehearsal. I had to rehearse it on my own in New York, which, believe me, I did, and get up there and hit it out of the park as if I'd been singing it 8 times a week on Broadway for for 4 weeks. And I really actually felt, I really did, David, feel that I did very well. I do feel good about my work in that show. And I relished it because it came on the heels of the sadness of episode 608. And it's funny, I did 3 episodes for Rachel Bloom, but the highlight episode is 108. So 608 was the bell tolling for Deanna in Walking Dead, and 108 was the Christmas show for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. So that seems to be my lucky number combination.
I really enjoyed having a conversation with Tova. She's a wonderful, wonderful actor, and we look forward to seeing her in a lot more, if not in The Walking Dead again. You never know. Maybe she'll come back in a flashback. Maybe she's still alive and well and under a pile of dead bodies, a la Glenn, if you know what I'm talking about. And if you made it this far in the podcast, you absolutely know what we're talking about, because you know you are a diehard Walking Dead fan. If you are a big Walking Dead fan, you should also check out the new issue of Famous Monsters, because Greg Nicotero, the makeup effects guru, who is also executive producer and director on the show, he speaks with us, and he talks about that first half that was such a relentless, relentless, amazing season, and what's in store for the second season when it comes back. And for all things Famous Monsters, please go to famousmonsters.com or captainco.com to get your issue, if not at Barnes & Noble and on your local newsstand. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube. It's easy to find. We know you can find it. And if you like our podcast, we'd really appreciate you sending messages of encouragement and review and comments and likes where you're saying good things about us. And if you say that you really like our podcast, I will buy you a cheeseburger. So until next time, if you enjoy Famous Monsters, you enjoy our comics, please spread the word and make sure to incorporate horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and genre pop culture into your conversations to ensure generations of monster kids to come. And until next time, we'll see you later.
The Famous Monsters podcast is copyright Famous Monsters and Movieland Classics, LLC. All rights reserved.